Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna from immigration.com. The last is Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. This is our community conference call of June 6th, 2013. This call is being recorded, so please be mindful if you want to keep your identity confidential. Don't state your real name. You want to hide certain facts about yourself. Do that, because this call will be made publicly available to people. By participating in this call, you have not become our clients, nor have we become your lawyers. This is merely for information dissemination. That said, the way we will handle it like we always do, I'll first respond to all the questions that have been posted on the forums, and then I will answer follow-up questions on the posted questions, and then, time permitting, we'll take all the new questions if we have any. Okay. My first question today, guys, is I have said to someone that you can go for H-1B stamping in any country, and unless you've been out of status. If you've been out of status, then it becomes a lot more tricky because the consulate can refuse to take your application unless you are in your home country. They can say that you have been out of status unless you have a very good reason for being out of status, an exceptional reason, they can decline to take your application. So the follow-up question on that was, well, I was out of status during F-1 visa in 2009-2010, but applied for reinstatement and got approved. I think you'll be fine. See, what happens is, as a practical matter, consulates are not looking into this too closely, but if they do ask you, of course, you have to tell the truth, and in filling out the form DS-160, you have to reveal the fact that you were out of status, whenever it asks you that. So if it asks you, answer it truthfully, but it should not be a problem for you, okay? In your situation, it's not a problem. This question is from Swap, who says, what happened was, their H-1 was filed, but the LCA was still in process. It was not yet approved. Okay. Company has filed with LCA, which shows it as in process instead of a certified LCA. LCA was certified by the time the H-1 application was sent to USCIS, but there was, the incorrect paper was submitted. Is there any way we can appeal? So the problem here is this. USCIS will come back and they'll say, well, the quota is over. There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, you can try calling USCIS customer service and see if there's anything that can be done about it. I have very grave doubts that this is going to work out. I always have wondered about one thing. They say the quota is over. Then they deny so many H-1s. What are they going to do with all that quota that is not filled? It's a mystery. As far as I know, it goes waste. But that's not the way it should be. So you can try, okay? Blue Sat 2008 wanted to know, how is Balka trending? Well, first of all, I want you to know something. Balka appeals are a very, very long shot. Only about 1 out of 100, 200 appeals are successful. So I do not know exactly what the denial reason was. It says, pursuant to the Department of Labor Regulations, page 8 of the ETA 9089 must be signed by the associate slash employee. Did not pay any money to the employer towards the green card. I'm not sure exactly. This is a little vague. I'm not sure exactly what happened. But in any case, appeals are a very long shot. It takes many years for the appeals to come to a complete hearing. I would seriously consider if you can withdraw this and file a new one. And the way you would do it is this. What happens is when – let me take a step back. It's a little difficult concept to explain. When a perm application appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. Concept number one, appeal pending, H-1 extensions. Concept number two, you can apply for an H-1 extension, any H-1 extension, 6 months ahead of time. Concept number two. Concept number three, once USCIS gives you an H-1, they will not take it back. So if we combine these three concepts, the way you would do it is, let's say your H-1 seventh year begins January 1st and ends December 31st. Okay? So what you will do is, you will apply for your H-1 extension 6 months before January 1st. So in the previous year, June, you have applied for your six-month extension. At the same time, you start your somewhere in July, August of the previous year, you start your advertising and all, so your PERM application is ready. Now, your H-1 gets approved for the following year, somewhere in July, August, if you've done premium processing of the previous year, okay? Now what you do is you file your PERM. Before filing your PERM, you withdraw your appeal. Now the appeal has gotten you January to December 31st extension for the following year. In the prior year, July, August, you have now withdrawn the appeal. We know they're not going to take away your H-1 that they've already given you. And now you file your PERM, which you're already ready for. Now what happens is you file your PERM, let's say, in August. In August of the following year, for which you have approval till December, you now are entitled to getting H-1 extensions based upon this second labor certification. That's the way to do it. Okay? So it can be planned. Get together with your lawyers if you haven't understood my logic. Just rewind and hear it a few times. I have made perfect sense. Believe me, I know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not difficult to do. We've done it a bunch of times. Perfectly legal, perfectly okay. But tell your lawyers to send this up to you, okay? It can be done that way. Helix 113 says, derivative visa for parents of H-1B holder. In fact, it's kind of interesting. Just today, I have a physician who was on the phone with me with a similar problem. Let me explain to you the problem. If you're on H-4, if you're on H-1, you can only bring your spouse and minor children on H-4. What if you have a parent that you were taking care of in India or Australia or wherever you live, okay? You want to bring your parent, but H-4 is not permissible. Then what you do is you bring them on a tourist visa and you ask USCIS to keep giving extensions, stating that they are not entitled to H-4, but there's nobody in India to take care of them or there's nobody in New Zealand to take care of them. So they should be treated as dependent upon you. We have been able to get extensions for 4 or 5 years at least for several people in this situation. After that, they become citizens and, you know, green card holder citizens, and then they apply for their parents' green card. It's all over. Anyway, so the answer is yes. There, such a use of tourist visa is known, and it's accepted, where you do, instead of an H-4, because the person is not entitled to H-4, you do a tourist visa, and you keep extending that. So far, we've not had any problem. We've done several cases like that. And this is also well known for example, gay couples. So if a gay person wants to bring their gay spouse or gay, you know, lover, then they can do it through tourist visa. This was well known. Next question is Rosal Singh, L2 EAD to H-1B transfer. With them, what's going on, there is a one-month gap between L2 to H-1B October 1st. So what they're saying is to cover 1 month gap, I need to extend my EAD after my L2 visa is extended. Hence, after getting the L2 extension done in Canada, I will be entering USA on L2 visa. Is it okay to travel and enter on L2 visa? No. Because then you will have to go again and get your H-1 or H-4 stamping done and re-enter on October 1st. Because first of all, when you travel while change of status is pending, you are abandoning the change of status. not the H1 or the H4, but the change of status. You are abandoning that. So either you have to refile the change of status effective October 1st, or you have to go out and get H1, H4 visa stamping and come back. So that's the way to handle it. What you would do is, well, that's what you need to remember. How do you handle it? 1 month gap. Well, I think the best thing you should do is you should file for an L2 extension within USA and just ask for 30 days or 32 days, whatever you're missing. You know, that should cover you. INS2 says applying for EB2 green card by corporation if not employed there. I'm working on H1B for company A. There's a company B which can apply for my green card, but I'm not their employee. That's fine. Question number one, is it possible for company B to apply for my green card for future employment? Definitely. If yes, what if I get a good offer from company C and they want to start the green card? No problem. You can have green card process going through 5,000 companies. As long as it is your good faith intention not to misuse the system, but to join whichever green card suits you the best once it is approved. So it's not like you are just doing it for the fun of it, but you actually have the intention of joining any one of them that's convenient to you in a future time. Question number two, I heard now it is possible to get the H1 stamping done within USA. No, it is not possible. That's called visa revalidation. That process was discontinued. In fact, we did petition the White House on behalf of the community, and a few thousand people signed the petition that they should reinstate visa revalidation. Under the new law, visa revalidation will be reinstated if the law passes. But right now, if you want visa stamping, you've got to go outside USA. Kumar08K says, should the employee taxes be run in employer location or client location? Kumarji, you don't want my advice on taxes. In taxes, I am an absolute zero. I barely passed my tax exam in law school. I had a very tough time with numbers. I still do. So what you want to do is you want to get this checked out by your CPA, okay, your corporate CPA. What do they suggest? I do not know about the taxation aspect. The immigration aspect is quite simple. You must be authorized both under the terms of your H1 and your LCA to work where you are working. That's it. Okay? That's the immigration aspect. Jeet wants to know about stamping. Change status from L1A to H1B during October 2012. H1B was approved till September 2013. Perm is already applied. They'll recapture the period you were outside USA for 8 months. My question is, how long did it take to approve the extension for recapture? That depends. If you file premium, a few weeks. If you file non-premium, a few months. And can I go to India and get return with stamping during the recapture period? The answer is yes, because it's an H-1B extension. But please keep in mind, H-1B stamping is very problematic. Still very problematic. If you're lucky, you may not have a problem. But most people have been delayed, or they've been given a lot of hassle by the consulates. So avoid traveling if you can. Nikat, citizenship application questions, spouses in India. Nikat is filing N-400 for citizenship. Got green card in August 2008. My wife had an L1B visa while we got married in 2010. Renewal got rejected. She was pregnant with high risk pregnancy, so she couldn't. You filed for change of status to B2, which got approved till end of June. She left for India last week, prior to the expiration of her B2, along with the baby, for the U.S. citizen. They'll come back once I become citizen and file for a green card. So that's the situation. Wife and child in India, child is a U.S. citizen, wife has a tourist visa. NCLT is filing an N-400. In the N-400, there is a section about spouse's immigration status. I'm planning to specify that she has a non-immigration status, B2, with a valid up-to-date. Is there any other information that should be provided? If I were you, I would just attach a small explanation that my spouse is not in USA. They are currently in India. 2, in spouse and child address, I'm planning to put the India address. That is the right thing to do. I can't help you fill the form, but anywhere they ask you about the address of somebody who's not in the United States, you have to put the address of where they actually are. Is there a need to explain why you're staying separately? No, I don't see any need. This is a very genuine case. It's a genuine need. Excuse me, why I need to move my mic a little bit. So I don't see any need for you to explain anything. Okay. Are traffic violations required to be reported if the fine was less than 500? You know, you have to look at the question on the N-400. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the question is. I think question says something like, other than simple parking violations. If it's a moving violation, I think you have to report it. Okay. For selective services registration, is there a letter required from SSS to verify that I was on a non-immigrant visa? No. No, you shouldn't. They can check that out themselves. Okay. Next question is from Rajesh, who says, secondary inspection at POE. What happened was they entered on H4 and they went through secondary inspection. They were taken aside and they had to spend some time. Is this going to be a problem for future travel? I cannot comment about that. I do not know what the reason for your secondary inspection is. Can this come up again? Yes, it can. But is it a big deal? I wouldn't worry about it. It's okay. It might cause you some delays. Obviously, they let you go this time. They will let you go the next time and the next time as well. Okay? Rahul Gopal Joshi says, F1 OPT, Namaste Rajiji, Namaste Gopalji. F1 OPT changed to H4. There is a small follow-up to earlier questions a couple of weeks back. Rahulji, I won't remember what that question was, but let me see if I can answer this. Graduated and started a post-completion OPT with OPT start date of graduation plus 50 days. Change of status from F1 to H4 filed before the first 90 days of accrued and unemployment are over. So can I still continue to stay in U.S. legally? Yes, why not? Because they were still in F1 status when they applied for H4. I don't see any problem with it. After the change of status decision received, is there any additional grace period? No. No, there's no grace period after this. But they don't need it because they filed for H4 within the 90 days. That's the best, as best as I can see, it should not be a problem. Is the change of status typically retroactive? Probably not. Here's the problem. USCIS approves cases typically from the date they act on them. So you can often have a situation where there's a gap or apparent gap in the status. Don't worry about it. It's not going to be a problem from any angle. Uday 01, wife applied new advanced parole, received date 15th March, not approved, flight travel date fast approaching. Does the USCIS have to make a decision in 90 days? No, but that's what they shoot for. What might be the best approach and decision? I would get in touch with the USCIS customer service and kind of try to open a service request saying that this is very urgent. We want to make sure this will get approved within time. Would it help? Well, I think it should. You can try it. Get together with the USCIS customer service. I have had no problems dealing with a lot of things through the customer service. So I think you can try that. But you may, in future, don't cut things so close because there's never any guarantee that government is actually going to act in 90 days. Usually they do. Almost all our cases, advanced parole, EADs, have come within 90 days. Next question is Karthik 12. OPT valid until Feb 2014 and got H-1B approval on 3rd June 2013 but was laid off from the job. Currently on OPT stamp extension, which is valid until Feb 2014. So can I find a new employer and transfer my H-1B immediately before my H-1B started? Absolutely. Once the H-1B is approved, it's transferable even without pay stubs. So obviously you're not going to have any H-1 pay stubs because H-1 has not kicked off yet. So do it now, no problem. And even if they revoke your H-1, you should not be subject to the quota. Then the next question is GPROV. Company has filed LCA. Oh, I think we have already done this one. Because this is the one where the LCA was in process. And the problem is once you fall out of the quota, they are going to take the position that, well, the quota is over. We can't do anything for you. Aspen 2013 or APSON 2013 says, I-140 approved, which states require I-140 to be released? So our question is this. I think I've mentioned this a few times. What happens is under Virginia rules of ethics, so every state has certain rules under which the lawyers must work. We are not free to do whatever we want to. We have to abide by certain rules of ethics. And if we don't, we can lose our license to practice. So under Virginia rules, when I represent employer and employee both, I have to provide a copy of the documentation enough to protect the employee. There's no way I can hurt the employee because they are my clients equally. It doesn't matter whether the employer sends me 10,000 cases or whoever paid the salary, or paid my, sorry, not the salary, paid my fees. Our legal fees is irrelevant. If you are our client and you are the intended beneficiary, we have to protect you equally. Equal footing as the other client who's the paying client or the big client. Doesn't matter. That's the Virginia rules of ethics. So if you are our client, our documentation very clearly says, look, Mr. Employer, look, Mr. Employee, you are both our clients. So we have to protect both of you. We can't hurt one against the other. So that should be the law pretty much in every state in one form or another. So the problem is company is located in Virginia. He works in Minnesota, and the law firm is in Texas. Okay. So they have already filed. They need a copy of their I-140. They filed the Freedom of Information Act request, which is a good way to go. Our FOIAs are coming through within 30 days or so, which is not bad. Okay. So is there another way to do it? You know, you should call the Texas bar and see if under Texas law or Texas rules of ethics, they are required, the lawyer is required to surrender a copy to you. Okay. I would also go ahead and file a Freedom of Information Act request for papers with the Department of Labor to see if you can get a copy of the labor certification. They take a lot longer. Okay. Arjun wants to know, I bring my girlfriend to US to get married. So the question is, I'm in H-1B, I'm talking to a girl, I want her to come on a tourist visa. Well, that can be fraud. Okay. That can be fraud. She should not come in on a tourist visa with the intention to get married. They can create a problem about that. Yeah. See, change of status from B to H-4 like this is almost always a bad idea. Yeah, I don't see that as a good option at all. See, even when, Arjun, even when you do it this way that she comes on a tourist visa, she gets married to you, and then she leaves, and then applies for H-4, I think consulate can create a problem even with this. They can say this was a misuse of the tourist visa. Just my guess. What if she went to a third country? What if she came to Canada and you went to Canada and you got married there? Hey, if the Canadian laws permit you to do that, I think that's perfectly legal under U.S. laws. You should have no problem in that case. Look into that angle. Going to a third country to get married. See, if you go to Canada or Mexico and your trip is less than 30 days, you don't need a visa to come back here. That's called, as you must know, that's called automatic visa revalidation. Less than 30 days to Canada, Mexico, contiguous islands, you don't really need to get a visa stamp. So you can come, go, get married, come back, if the law of the third country allows you to do so, because they may have some domicile requirements. Jerry wanted to know about hotels. I'm sorry, Jerry, not much I can do there. You should post in the general forums, ask other users. They can better tell you what is a good hotel to stay in Philadelphia. Vasudha Fini, daughter is a citizen, husband is on H-1. I am on H-4. We filed for green card concurrent processing in September. We are in Louisville, Kentucky. Daughter is in New Jersey. Currently, Louisville, Kentucky is processing October 12 application. Our application is at Lee Summit, Missouri. They say that she tried getting in touch with USCIS. They say you have to wait. Okay. If your processing is beyond normal time, you should open a service request. And if they say you have to wait, not because your application is not within time, but because of some other reason, you can open a request with the USCIS Ombudsman's Office. Ombudsman. O-M as in Mary, B as in boy, U, D as in doctor, S as in Sam, Ombudsman as in man, woman, M-A-N. So you can open, you can just do a search for USCIS Ombudsman, open a case with them, if it's beyond time. Naveen, my mouse is, wireless mouse is giving some trouble. Naveen 256, H1 EAD. I work full time for my current employer on H1 extension, and I also have an EAD. Can I moonlight? Well, if you moonlight, then you will be on EAD. Then you can work for both of them on EAD. You can't have H1 and EAD at the same time. If you want to continue working on H1, then the moonlight job should file for a concurrent H1 for you. Okay. Last question is from MTA. I-140 was denied with premium processing in EB2. This is an interesting question. So they filed their first I-140 premium processing. They gave the labor certification with that. Can we file again premium processing? I don't have my original labor certification. And the answer is, USCIS has said, you can try. We will accept premium processing if you do it quickly enough so that we have the original labor certification in our possession and we've not put it away in the records room. So try. Okay. I am going to ask you folks to let me see. I think it's a star 5. If you have any follow-up questions on what I have discussed so far, press star 5 on your phone, please. Star 5. 1, 2, 2 raised hands. Okay. Let's start in the order you folks called in. Area code 409. Go ahead, please. 409. Area code 409.
Hi, Raju sir. Regarding my OPT, I was laid off on the job. So can I do my transfer immediately or do I need to wait until my H1 start date is approaching, until October?
Remind me what question number you were.
14.
14?
14, yes.
Okay. Okay, and the answer is you do not have to. I think you didn't hear it, but you did not. You don't have to wait. Your H1 is approved. You can immediately apply for transfer.
Okay, and during this process, is there any possibility of a query or anything?
Oh, possibility of query is always there. Queries come in almost every case that is filed. That's nothing to worry about. Legally, you're entitled to doing this.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let me get the next person. This is area code 479. Go ahead, please. 479.
Hello, Mr. Khanna. This is for Blue Sat 2008. This is question number 3.
Yes,
I had a follow-up question regarding, I am actually out of the country right now because of my 365 days not fulfilling from the date I filed my perm, which was on June the 16th of 2012.
Okay.
I do plan to return back to the U.S. in a couple of months once I file my H-1 beyond 16th of June this year. The thing is, my perm is in Balka, and I'm really not sure how to proceed with the extension and refiling of the perm that you suggested.
You need to get together with your lawyers, play what I have written, what I have spoken before. The idea is that you can adjust the timing in such a way that you get your H-1 extension and then withdraw your Balka appeal. At the same time, have the perm ready and file it. It can all be adjusted, all three things. But that has to be done by your lawyers. I cannot go beyond that. I've already given you my opinion on this.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yeah, just play and replay it a few times. You will get it. If you don't get it, come back in 2 weeks. We'll talk about it again.
Okay. But do I need to be in the country to file the new perm, or can I start the process when I'm out of the country?
You can start the process when you're outside the country.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, once again, anybody has any follow-up question? I guess there is one more. Okay. Area code 608. Go ahead, please.
Namaste, Rajivji.
Namaste, sir.
This is Rahul Gopal Joshi, and my question was regarding moving from F1 OPT to H4, and I had two or three different questions on that.
Right.
I think it's question number 11 or
12. I got it. 12.
So in the last question, I think you mentioned that the change of status may not come retroactively, right? Like if it is approved.
Right.
Which means then would you be actually like out of status for a few days if you already finished those 9 days of unemployment, and is that a problem?
This is one of those unavoidable problems, and USCIS is well aware of it, and they do not create a problem with it. Let me explain to you what happens, and this is true for every case that you file. So let's say you filed your H-4 or H-1 change of status today. They received it today. From today onwards, everything, as long as you were in status on the day you applied, you are now in something called authorized period of stay, which is not full status, but it is not illegal. So when they will approve your case 2 months down the line, they'll approve it effective from that date. However, those 2 months, if in those 2 months you went out of status because more than 90 days of accrued unemployment happened, or your I-94 expired, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So this is one of those practical problems to which there is no solution unless they retroactively approve cases, and then typically don't.
Okay. But in that case, so let's say after your status was changed and came, and if you, let's say, want to go back for stamping on your new status or whatever, this period,
it's not a problem. It's not a problem. Okay. You were never out of status because you filed your case in a timely way. Not a problem.
Right. And then since you are in your authorized period of when you actually, based on the fact that you filed it before that 90-day period, your 90-day period could very well expire within the authorized stay period and till you are waiting for the change of status decision. That's also okay, right?
That's exactly what I said.
Right. Okay. Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks so much. Have a very good day.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's see if we've got any more. I guess there is one more. Area code 703, my neighborhood. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Raju, sir. First of all, thank you for providing this wonderful service for the folks who are in the process of immigration and naturalization. This is a NECAT and a citizen application, a spouse in India, question number 10.
Yeah, I have you in front of me. Go ahead.
Okay, great, sir. I have a couple of follow-up questions. First up is about my spouse who is in India. Her I-94 currently is valid up to end of June this year, but we were thinking of planning to go for a tourist visa with full disclosure that I plan to immigrate my husband in the process of getting naturalized on humanitarian grounds, that so the baby and the father can meet a little before she gets a green card. What are the chances of that, sir?
What you're planning is perfectly legal, and if the tourist visa is granted, it should create no problems. But chances of tourist visa getting granted are very slim.
Very slim. So there will be no repercussions on my application, of my N-400 application? Even
none
if
whatsoever.
Go for it.
None whatsoever, because you are making full disclosure.
Okay, great, sir. Thank you on that. And second question I have, sir, is I'm planning to travel after I file my application and get my fingerprinting done. So is it okay to travel while your N-400 application is pending out of the country?
Yes, it is. How long would you be gone for?
So I'll be gone for 3 weeks.
No problem.
Okay, so it's not like you're 485.
It's
different from...
Yeah, it's different from 485 and other applications, yes.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Still showing one more raised hand. I don't see. Oh, yeah, here it is. Area code 215. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me, Raji?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Hello?
I can hear you. No problem.
Yeah, Rajiv, I had a question. So how do my I-140 has been approved. So basically
One second. Is this a new question or a posted question?
It's a new question.
Hang on. I'll get back with you. Stay on.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Folks, anybody has any question, any new questions, no problem. Raise your hands. I will take you in the order in which you joined the conference call. Press star 5 on your phone for any question. Star 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, very good. Let's get started. First of all, I messed up. Area code 484, go ahead.
Yeah, hi Rajuji. This is for the question number 13. First of all, thank you for that. This is for advance parole, right? So this is already 3 months and still she did not get it, and the same day we applied and I got it almost a month and a half before. So are you observing the delays from your side also, that the advance parole is getting almost 3 months?
We are getting them all within 3 months as far as I know. I have, again, you know, I can ask some of the frontline people, actually. Hang on 1 second.
Sure.
I don't remember anybody's extensions in my office. That's the problem. 1 second.
Sure.
Prerna ji, please call me back on my extension. Prerna ji. Let me ask some of the people who are involved with advanced roles. Prerna ji, what is the time frame for advanced roles? Are we getting them all within 90 days usually?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So there's your answer.
Okay, thank you. So can I ask a follow-up question, Rajivji?
Of course, go ahead.
Yeah, so since her old advance parole is there for some more time, 1 month, so she cannot go on her old and come on the new one which she will get in future, right?
She can.
There is
she can as long as she enters within the time period of this current AP. If she wants to travel on this and come back on the new one, she can't. We have checked that with CBP, and CBP said you can't do that.
Okay. Okay, I think that's it. Thank you. I appreciate for clarifying that. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Area code 773. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Rajiv. This is Rafi. How are you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. Thank you for asking. Rajiv, I have one question regarding I-94. Recently, some rules has changed. Like, suppose if I'm traveling out of country for Canada by road, how that I-94 works? Like, what I'm supposed to do?
What is your current status?
I'm on EAD advanced parole. So I'm traveling on EAD and advanced parole, actually.
Okay. Advanced parole people, I'm not sure what they are doing at the land borders, but there are only two possibilities. If you really want to know the answer, just call CBP. They'll be able to tell you. But the way it works is, even if they don't give you the I-94, you can go and print it out. You go to cbp.gov/I-94. You can print it out.
But like I have not returning the I-94 while entering to the different country, right, by a road. Suppose if I'm going to Canada, there will be a no check in between in the U.S. borders.
So what you're saying is you already have an I-94. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, so I already have an I-94 while getting inside the country in the U.S., but if I'm going out of country for Canada, it means I don't have to return the I-94.
Okay.
Right?
Let me
try one more. If I'm not returning the I-94, then I cannot print the I-94 online then.
Right. Let me try to understand what you're saying, and I think you're right. What you're saying is, I'm going to Canada by road. I'm going for less than 30 days. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now the question is, number one, do I have to surrender my I-94? The answer is no.
Okay.
So when I re-enter, will I get a new I-94? No. Because you are re-entering using advanced parole and that old I-94.
Okay.
So is there a follow-up question after this? This is what you will be doing.
Yeah, but like last time, means I did the same thing last time. I went to Canada by road. Nobody has took my I-94, and while coming in U.S. on advance parole, and I have shown my previous I-94, they took it, and they have issued the new I-94 at the time.
So you can do the same thing again. What's the
problem? So, I mean, I don't have to print the new law which is implemented?
You see, you're not understanding what they do. Let me explain to you what they do.
Okay.
They will issue you a paper on an I-94. Some borders, they are still doing that. I think there is a system to it. I don't remember what it was. Some borders are still issuing a paper I-94s.
Right.
And what they do is, if they don't issue a paper I-94, they get the relevant information from you and put it in the electronic medium. So when you enter USA, you can go and print it out.
Okay.
So they do one of the two things. Either they give you the paper I-94 or they take enough information that you can and put it in the electronic system so that you can go and print it out.
Okay. And Rajesh, sir, is there any problem if I stay more than 30 days?
If you stay more than 30 days, then, well, actually, what am I saying? Because you're using advanced parole, not a visa, even if you stay more than 30 days, the same procedure should apply.
Okay. All right. And one more question, Rajiv sir, like if I apply advance parole and EAD in U.S. And the process is in the continue, and if I go out of the country, it means it has any problem, like while the process is going on, if I go out of the country?
If you have a valid advance parole when you re-enter, the same one that you left on, no problem.
Okay.
But if the advance parole expires, then your 485 is down. It's gone.
Okay. And means if my advance paroles got approved, the new and with new advance parole, can I able to use while coming in U.S.?
No. I just answered that question for somebody. You cannot use an old AP to travel out and then use the new AP to come back in. You've got to come back within the life of the old AP. That's what CBP told us.
Okay. Okay, but I already have the valid advance parole, and if I got approved, the new one, I cannot.
Excuse me. I've got a bunch of people waiting. I'm going to have to cut this short. I've answered enough questions.
Sure.
Do you have anything that needs immediate answering? If not, wait. If I have time, I'll come back to you, okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let me go on to the next person. Area code 404. Go ahead, please. Area code 404. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Umesh. Actually,
yes,
I have a... I have a question regarding my parents' tourist visa.
Okay.
Actually, I am on green card, and my parents, my dad is still working, but I don't know what's the reason they got denied in last 1.5 year, 3 times under 214B. So
okay.
I'm right now, I'm not able to understand what should I do and how to convince them. They are always saying you have very less tie-up than India.
Well, I have said this before, that this tie-ups to India and tie-ups to your home country is a very nonsensical concept. It makes no sense. What is a tie-up? You have land in India? Well, you can sell the land. You have money in India? You can spend the money. You can transfer the money. So it's really, this whole concept is a little idiotic, but this is the concept that they use. Let me ask you this question. Have your parents been to the United States before? Ever?
No, never.
Unfortunately, you're in a tough situation. We can try, argue it out with them, try for them to see reason, but there really is absolutely no guarantee that anybody can succeed in getting them to school.
Okay?
Okay.
Going through the 214B details, and what they are saying is you have to just come up with one paper saying what are your strong tie-up and show it to the visa officer, and if the decision is on them. So should I try with that, making an affidavit one more time, or sending them?
But I would suggest get yourself a lawyer to do it. At least if you're going to take a chance, take a chance in a way that's most more likely to succeed than if you do it yourself. Okay?
Okay. So will you guys take my case if I approach to your firm?
Of course, no problem. We'll be happy to make a brief to the State Department. It's a very difficult case to have any hope of success on, but we can try. We can certainly make a case for you that, you know, this is a case that should be assessed.
All right. Thank you. So whom should I contact in your office for the details?
You can just send me an email to help@immigration.com.
All right. Got it.
Just remind me that we talked today. By the way, guys, before I forget to mention, our apps are now available on Android platform also. So we have iPhone, iPad, and Android. If you have any of these apps, you can actually send us emails to the apps also. The way you get the app is just look for immigration.com. So immigration, the period dot, as in, dot, the not the word DOT, but dot, immigration.com. If you look for that, it should come up on both Android as well as iOS side, okay? Download it, install it. If you like it, let us know. If you don't like it, let us know what we can do to improve. We have certainly enjoyed creating those apps for you. That said, yeah, just go ahead and send me an email to help@immigration.com, H-E-L-P, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Ashish.
Good luck, sir. Okay. Area code 281. Go ahead, please. 281. Texas.
Hello, Rajiv. This is Srinath.
Yes, sir.
Actually, I'm on my seventh year of H-1B. When I was on sixth year, like, you know, they applied for a green card on EB-3, but that went into audit, and then, like, you know, they submitted the audit, and it got rejected, so they went on petition. So now the case is under petition. Meanwhile...
Wait, 1 second. When you say petition, you mean appeal, right, to Balka?
Yeah, sorry. They went
on appeal. Okay. No, I got it. Okay, keep going.
Okay. Now, it is my current extension, they got an extension of 1 year, which is expiring on September 1st. So, now they thought, like, you know, before, you know, I reached that date, you know, they have come up with a kind of alternate arrangement. They want me to send, you know, abroad. We have our branches in, you know, other country, you know, to send me out there for about 1 year and then bring me back on a different visa like L1A. So my, you know, manager and, like, you know, directors, they are asking me, okay, to successfully bring you back on L1A and without any hazard legally, so what is that we need to do, okay? In that case, like, you know, our attorneys are not really helpful. Like, I had a conversation, you know, but it was not that helpful. So, any guidance on that from you would be
yes. I can certainly give you a couple of pointers.
Okay.
To have an easy and successful L1A,
okay,
we need to focus on two things. One is the job that you will be doing in outside USA. The job should be clearly managerial, executive or managerial, which actually USCIS likes to see you supervise professionals. So if you are supervising a bunch of professionals, 10, 15, 20 people, chances are you will not have a problem with getting an L1A. If I were you, what I would do is I would, before moving, I would show my intended job description to the corporate lawyers or any lawyers, you know, get a consultation that does this job qualify for L1A.
Okay.
So that's one part. The job must qualify. The second part is the company here and the company outside USA must be related to each other. Either they should be one owns the other, or both of them are owned by a third company, or both of them are owned by the same set of individuals in roughly the same proportions. So the company relationship should be there, and your job must meet the L1A requirements. If you have those two covered, chances are you will be fine, as long as the job that you will come back to in USA is also a managerial job.
Okay. You said, I mean, like, you know, the 15 to 20 people you're telling, I mean, is that a number, I don't know, like, you know, I mean, there's the chance that, you know, people report to me, but it may not be 15 to 20, like, you know, I don't know, it may be, like, you know, 6 to 8 people direct report to it, and there are vendors, you know, who can indirectly report to me, like, you know, how do we go ahead?
I think somebody should look at the job description. Because there's a bunch of things we have to look at. Number of people is not the only thing. There's something called functional manager. In your case, I think even 6 to 8 could qualify, but I can't comment on it. Something called functional manager. Sometimes you're not managing people, but you're managing a function. For example, I'll give you a couple of successful cases we just did last month. One of the cases, the guy was He was the guy who decided the cost of the services. So the company has 15 or 18,000 employees, and they have, you know, different people doing different things. But this guy's job is only to sit down with various consulting teams and decide what they are going to charge. So kind of like a costing expert, okay? And so we were able to show the USCIS that even though he's not supervising anybody, he's in charge of a very important function.
Okay.
And that function is costing. So that's just one example. We had a similar case in, that was a quality assurance. Somebody who was making sure that the company's quality assurance program was in compliance with certain standards that the government needed. So, you know, somebody who's a compliance expert, he's not really supervising people, but he's making sure that certain criteria are being followed by all teams that he works with. So that's another example.
Okay.
Okay.
If I need your assistance as further on this, like, you know, what is the best case?
Sure. We'll be happy to take a look at it. Guys, I don't want you to get this feeling in any case that we are here trying to get business for ourselves. I'm doing this merely because I enjoy doing this, and in my enjoyment, you know, 5, 10, 15 people get something useful out of it. That's my sole motivation. I'm not here to get
money. Really, I don't have any such thoughts. You know, I mean, I seriously
right.
some kind of friends. But that's why.
Right.
I'm in the
no, we'll be happy to. We'll be happy to assist, and we do have a very heavy focus on business and professional immigration investment visas. So we do a lot of these cases. You may want to send me an email to help@immigration.com. I'll tell you how to set this whole thing up.
Okay, I do that.
Good luck, sir.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I've got one more raised hand. Area code 215, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Rajiv, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, sir.
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv. My question is, my employer is not giving me my approved I-140 copy and also the firm copy. So I requested I submitted a FOIA request. So the FOIA people send me a CD. So in that CD, I got the approved application copy, but not the certification copy of I-140 and the labor. So how do I get those copy now?
What did you get then?
I got it like 2 weeks back. I got a CD from the USCIS.
But what did you get? What did they send you? What documents did you get?
Yeah, so the document that they sent me was basically the application, the perm application and the I-140 application. They did not send me the copy of I-140.
You did not get a copy of the I-140 approval. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what are you trying to do, an AC-21? What exactly are you trying to do?
Yeah, I'm trying to change my company, actually. So I'm trying to...
Yeah, AC-21, all you really need is a copy of the labor certification. You're fine, don't worry.
Yeah, but the thing, my company is not giving me that, the labor copy and the I-140 copy, right? Because I'm at
but
the end of my 6 years.
You've got me very confused. Hang on. You got me very confused.
Sorry.
You said you got a copy of the labor cert through the FOIA, didn't you?
No, I got a copy, but that copy is the application copy, you know, the form, the application that you apply, like while filling out the employer that, you know, the application copy.
Wait. Few words, more information. Let me understand. When they gave you the FOIA request response,
right.
did they not give you a copy of the ETA 9089?
No, they
the
did
form
not.
Application. Okay.
Oh,
In the I-140, your job description has been described, right?
Right.
That's all you need. You really need just a job description. Based upon that, you should be able to make a case for AC-21. I mean, ideally, of course, we want to look at the 9089. We want to see what the salary offered was, what the requirements were. But I'm surprised. We are getting, in response to the FOIA request, so far, we've been getting the entire application. We've been getting the 9089. We've been getting the, the I-140 as well as the approval notice. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I didn't have anything else to add. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, when I requested for the FOIA request like a couple of months ago, so they gave me the CD, but the only problem is like when I give it to my new employer, my going to be employer, so they told like, you know, we need the actual copy of I-140, not the application copy. What the FOIA CD gave me was the application copy, you know, that my employer had filled out the application form.
Okay, let me explain to you what you really do need. And
right.
If anybody tells you anything different, they need to listen to this and understand that they don't. Here's how it is. You need your job description. That's
mm-hmm.
the first thing. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you also need to know what the salary offered was, what the job requirements were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you have these three things, you do not need a copy of the I-140 approval notice for AC-21.
Okay. Yeah, because my situation is like my I'm ending the 6 years of my H-1B in December, so I have only 6 months left. So the problem is when I go to my new employer, they tell me we can with my current set of H-1B papers, they can get me into the company, but that will only be valid till December 2013. After that, they told we cannot extend because you only if you give me a PERM copy or a labor copy, then we can extend your visa. You know, on their.
This is actually more complicated. This is not that simple.
Right,
if you were doing
yeah.
AC-21 was simple, but now H-1, before you move employers, you have to make sure that the old employer did not revoke your I-140. So you should not
yeah.
move until the new H-1 is approved.
Yeah, but my new H-1 has been approved by my current employer. So my H-1 has been extended till 2016 now.
I'm very confused. What are you asking me?
Are you asking me about...
No, it's okay. It's not your fault. It's just that you're not connecting.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. Don't apologize. I'm very confused because I don't understand what you're asking me. Let me take over the conversation. Give me 1 second. Let me extract the information as I... You've got your H-1 approval for the new employer, correct?
Right.
Okay. You want to file the AC-21 letter with the USCIS saying I'm changing employers. Is that correct?
Right.
For that letter, you only need the job description. Have you understood that?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You don't need a copy of the I-140 approval.
Okay. All right. So basically,
now,
if I...
Wait. I'm not done yet. Then you can ask your questions once I've ascertained what the problem is. You've got your H-1 for 3 years or 1 year?
This new H-1 is for 3 years.
Good. So really, there is no problem here. You got
yeah,
your
so,
H-1 for 3 years. Go ahead.
Yes. So my problem is in December 2013, I'll be completing 6 years of my H-1, December 2013. Okay. So my sixth year of my H-1 is December 2013. Now, my company had filed for the I-140 and my I-140 got approved. And based on that, like last week, a couple of weeks back, they did the H-1B extension. So now my H-1B extension has been approved till December 2016 with my current employer. But now my situation is I want to change change to a new company. Okay, so when I go to this new company, so when I give my current H-1B papers to them, they are willing to take me in, but they only tell because of your second H-1B is valid till 6 years, that is December 2013, we will able to take you in and we will able to serve you till December 2013. He says in order to extend on our H-1B, we need either your labor copy or your PERM copy. Without that, we cannot extend your visa on our company name because
Let me ask you this. When you got your, I understand the situation a little better now. When you got your disk from the USCIS,
mm-hmm.
I-140 form have any stamps on it or any numbers
yeah.
on it?
Yes. Yeah, the I-140 has an approval stamp on it, approved.
Okay, you should be able to use that, and that should get you your H-1.
Okay, so basically my new employer, he's the new employer attorneys, they are very focused on it, like I need the I-140 original, not the original, but a copy of the I-140, you know, not the application approval. So
I am 100% sure that we have done H-1 extensions without the I-140 approval.
Okay, so in my case, I should be good to go ahead, right?
It's certainly for the short, I think it'll work out.
Okay, all right. So I'll just pass this message to my new employer.
Absolutely, because you have tried your best to get the paperwork. You have enough evidence showing that the case was approved, and they have, USCIS has all the paper that they need. They can pull it out from their own files. You have no access to it.
Right, and Rajiv, just for all the people who are listening, so basically, example, if an employer is not willing to give the perm application and the labor application, so except for the FOIA, what are my other options, I mean?
Those are the two options. What I do is, I do FOIA with Department of Labor and I do FOIA with USCIS both. Okay.
So FOIA is the only way, right, if the employer is not willing to give those copies?
That is correct. Actually, hold on one second. Let me ask one of my colleagues who just did the FOIA for me for a couple of cases. Give me 1 second.
Yep.
Kunal, call me back on my extension, please, Kunal. Let's just ask him.
Okay.
And guys, this will be the last question I've got to go on. I don't think he's here.
Okay. And Rajiv, sorry.
Yeah, I can update you guys next conference call. I'm pretty sure we got a copy of the I-140 receipt, we got a copy of the I-140 application, and we also got a copy of the labor certification. Kunal, when we got one of the most recent FOIA requests we had done with USCIS, is my understanding correct that we got a copy of the I-140?
Yeah.
We got a copy of the form application.
I believe we got everything that was in this. We checked the boxes of complete alien file and we got...
So we got everything. Okay. Everything. Thank you, sir. And did we also get anything back from the... I know that we filed a FOIA with the Department of Labor also. Did we ever hear back from them?
No, we haven't gotten a response from them yet. No.
Thank you. And but the USCIS request came back within 30 days, right?
I can check when we sent it in. I think you're right. I think it was about 30 days.
Okay, that's good enough. Don't worry. And I'm pretty sure because I followed this case very closely. Thanks, Kunal.
Okay.
Bye. Yes, so there's your answer. We got a copy of everything.
Okay. So what I've done, Rajiv, in my case, I've reapplied to USCIS to send me a second ED. Actually, the first time I sent the request, I only requested for the approved copy of these two documents.
What we have done is we requested an entire copy of the file.
Exactly. Actually, that was a mistake I made. When I applied for the first time, I only requested two documents, but this time I've requested for the whole package, you know.
That'll work out. Don't worry. It's not that big a deal. It'll be fine.
Should I tell my company to go ahead with the current set of documents, the approved application copy I have, or should I wait for the original copy now?
They should go ahead and send it in anyway. They shouldn't wait.
Okay. All right.
Because
okay.
The danger here is if the old employer revokes your I-140, then you cannot get an extension.
Yeah. Actually, my employer, he doesn't know that I'm doing all this in the background, so I think I should be okay.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Folks, I will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you all for being here. Bye-bye.